Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I'm Adam Blattenberg from Diesel World.
Hi, this is Dan, owner of Dan's Diesel Performance.
I'm Christian Roth of BD Diesel.
I'm Braden Fleece, and you're listening to the Diesel Podcast.
What is going on, Diesel Nation? We're excited to have you guys with us today on the Diesel Podcast. We're continuing a closer look that we've been taking on the podcast into emissions, EPA, CARB, questions that our audience has about parts and racing, and what companies are doing out there to be able to offer parts for trucks from 2007 and a half to current, and some of the things they have to go through. So today, Christian from BD Diesel is going to chat with us, and he's going to give us some insights into what it's like to deliver a product to market and have it be 50 state compliant. And we wanted to ask him, you know, what does CARB look for? What does the EPA look for? Is it different? Is it the same? How do they go about, you know, drawing up a new turbo or really any component, and then being able to offer it to customers in California or any of the other 49 states? So we're really excited to be able to bring that to you today. I want to remind you guys that if you have any show suggestions or cool builds that you're working on, or just a topic you'd like to hear more about, make sure and drop us a message on Instagram. Just search at the Diesel Podcast. Or if you catch this video on YouTube, just drop a note in the comment section. Let us know. We'll do our best to get the guest or have the topic covered as well in a future episode. All right, let's get to the podcast with Christian and chatting about what it takes to make compliant parts. Christian, welcome back to the Diesel Podcast and chatting with us today about, well, I know it's been a major topic in diesel and really automotive, even gas, for quite a long time. And there's a lot of information and experience you have to chat with us about CARB and the EPA and products and the aftermarket.
Yeah, you know what, Patrick, it's good to be back. You know what, I felt I've taken a hiatus for a number of months, and we kind of been busy in the so-called kitchen, cooking up some different stuff, and there's a lot of new topics, a lot of subjects that currently are real hot right now, and so definitely we would like to kind of shed some light on that and educate consumers and other businesses and stuff like that, and what's going on with this ever-changing diesel market. This landscape is pretty dynamic and fluid.
Like, you know, this week I know one of the things that's been all over Facebook and Instagram and people are talking about is when, see, the EPA determines that a product is, that it violates the Clean Air Act, and they take, you know, action against that, is, you know, as diesel enthusiasts, we stop for a second and we say, okay, well, that's one product, but what does it mean for everyone? How do you have a compliant product? What is and isn't? And there's so much confusion there because we don't know. You know, we're not testing and engineering products, and you know, that's where you and BD come in, because you guys do that. And I wanted to ask you for your insights and opinions on that specifically with products and EPA and CARB testing.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously it's become a much more topic in the last number of years, right? And it's quite sensitive for some people, but you know what, in the case of businesses, it's kind of the due course, right? Businesses, all BD, if I can comment, that we've kind of changed direction a large number of years ago and kind of really focused at conforming to compliance, whether it's CARB or EPA. And in fact, our engineering development cycle now is full emissions compliance testing, right? So we won't take on a particular product or even look to design a product if we don't go through compliance testing. So, and we got multiple dozens of products currently at emissions laboratories going through the validations, the testing, whether CARB certified or EPA, sorry, not CARB certified, they don't like that certified word, but CARB compliant or EPA compliant, right? And so I kind of really wanted to touch base on kind of eliminating some of the confusion. What is there a difference between CARB compliant and is there a difference between EPA compliant, right? What are the two differences? Obviously, everybody knows jurisdiction-wise, CARB is California. and EPA is on a national level. It goes a little bit wider than that. Some of the CARB emission standards have been adopted by a large number of states. I think it's nine, but it could be up into the teens now. A lot of states are really adopting CARB's progressive approach to emissions, not only vehicle emissions, but other industrial emissions as well, right? VOCs and stuff like that. And so they're really focusing pretty hard, and the adoption of it for these other states makes a lot of sense, right? Saves those states some costs, right? They feel that, hey, CARB is kind of the leader when it in regards to setting emission standards. And so if we can just proverbial jump on coattails and follow their lead, we're going to be in a better situation. So you know what? That's what I think a number of states are doing, right, for a cost savings basis. But, yeah.
I think for truck enthusiasts that are out there and have been into diesels for quite a while, the major change, this is my perception, is, you know, in years past, if you had an idea for a turbo or a fuel system product or an air intake or anything like that, a company would do its, you know, internal engineering, do its testing, its design, and then at a certain point it's like, okay, we're going to make a part number for it, put it on the website, people can buy it. And I think what's changed is that's no longer the way it can be done. There has to be the testing that you mentioned with, you know, two different entities or other entities to be able to say, okay, we see this product is needed in the market. We're going to engineer it. We're going to test it. We're going to do everything we can to have it production ready. But instead of it just going on the website and to our dealers with a part number, it's now got to go to this testing facility so that we can have this compliant product to then put on the website, then offer for sale, then get out there to truck owners.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The design scope and the engineering scope has expanded quite a bit, and that's definitely key, right?
So what's the difference between, say, getting a CARB compliant product and an EPA compliant product? Are they separate testing procedures, or are there separate standards, or how does that work?
Yeah, so definitely. So obviously EPA is on the national level, and I think they give a lot of respect to what the CARB people have done. And so that's one thing is that if a product like our Dodge Screamer actually has a CARB EO number, that particular turbo is 50 state legal. You can sell it anywhere. And for the actual listed application, right? So that's a 100% legal part. And EPA says that, hey, since you actually have a CARB EO, you've gone through the CARB EO process, due diligence has been done, even emissions testing has been done, you're good to go in the EPA. And then CARB further scrutinize the test data and then takes a look at it and then issues a EO, executive order, a number, and then it's good to sell in California and the other states that follow California. So the testing process is kind of interesting, right? So depending on the model year, there's a number of different tests that need to be performed. You know what? The standard test is the FTP test, and it's kind of a rolling road test. Goes through different cycles, acceleration, decelerations, on and off the throttle. And that test is pretty much the standard test that's going to be done in every single situation. Even going back older model years, say a 2000, 2005 Ford 6-liter, you're going to do an FTP test, right? The later vehicles, like the LEV 3 and the LEV 2, actually, we'll speak about LEV 3. LEV 3, it's a little bit more encompassing for the diesel test. So they'll do the standard FTP, then they'll do a USO 6 and an SCO 3. So there's additional two other tests that they're going to want performed. And why are they going to want them performed? Because on a national level, on an EPA level, on a CARB level, those tests actually have been performed by the OE, right? And so they're going to do a comparison. So it's kind of interesting there. So when you do a comparison, they're obviously looking for the greenhouse gases, hydrocarbons, NOx, carbon monoxide, CO2, that type of stuff, and they're going to do the comparison, right? So, and CARB says that, you know what, you need to do a baseline. So you need to do a baseline of a stock truck. So I'm going to take my stock truck, I'm going to run a baseline. Those are the numbers. Perfect. You're going to install your product. You're going to do a OBD drive cycle, which on the later model vehicles can be about 200 to 300 miles. So you got to drive around for 200 to 300 miles before the OBD readiness code will actually get set. And if that passes, you can then take the next step and do an FTP test. So now you're comparing your FTP to your baseline, right? With CARB, CARB says, you know what, the maximum deviation is 10% above the baseline, right? 10% above the baseline. And we're talking about, in the case of our PM, we're talking about micrograms. So it is a very tight window to hit. So it's extremely difficult to hit, right? They monitor all the gases. And if for some reason you go above 10%, then you quite likely fail, right? Versus EPA is going to say, you know what, here's the standard that was set. This is the standard that EPA set for the maximum allowable, say, particulate matter, right? And as long as you fall below that standard, you're going to get a pass. So the CARB certification or the CARB compliant or the CARB test is actually a little bit tighter because they're looking for maximum deviation, where the EPA is saying that, hey, you know what, we'll compare you to a standard. As long as you fall below the standard, and that standard is set by EPA to the OE, you're good to go. And that standard, the technology and the emissions equipment now is very good. And that standard is kind of interesting, is where that standard could be, a couple micrograms, right? And if as long as I fall below that, I'm good to go on an EPA side of things, right? So where a CARB side of things, they're going to scrutinize a little bit more and ask a little bit more details. So,
now, as far as with the EPA and the national standard, is falling within that range just one particular? Was that the average? Say if you were to take a 200 or 300 mile trip, your average needs to be under that standard or at it, or how do they judge on a national level any deviation at all, really?
Yeah, so they compare it, and it's typically per grams per mile, right? So they take it over a period, right? So it's not a particular snapshot. It's not the way it actually roots out, it's actually an average over the particular test per particular mile, right? So it is kind of interesting, but you can fail very, very quickly depending on the particular product you're testing.
I was just thinking of a question, and this is just things that I've read over the years in regards to testing and the compliance and things like that from an enthusiast perspective, is it can be thought that, well, none of these entities want any sort of increased performance, but we don't know that. You know, I'm not testing products. I'm not designing or engineering them. But when you guys go to CARB or the EPA and you're able to show, hey, the truck still meets the standard and it has, you know, this benefit or that benefit, whatever it might be, are they appreciative of that? Or is it something where it's not looked at as a negative? It's looked at like, wow, you guys are offering an aftermarket product that still meets the standards and gives the, you know, end user a couple more benefits.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know what, in all our dealings, everybody's been pretty open, actually, polite, and they understand our industry exists, and they understand there's a lot of industries that exist. And again, we operate on a professional level, right? The people at CARB and EPA are professionals. Generally, they're very open to product as long as it meets the requirement, right? We've been working with them for, oh, geez, a long time, actually, 15 years. And every situation they've been more than professional.
Now, with products, you'd mentioned a lot of them that you guys either have a, you know, compliance testing for and are working on. Is, as far as the future and the product line, how do you see it expanding, or how do you see the choices for truck owners out there to be able to purchase either a product that meets both, or, you know, or one CARB compliant, one EPA compliant product?
Yeah, and so, and how that is that you're going to see as these, as the the requirements are there, right? And so everybody that wants to be in this business is going to have to get EPA or CARB compliant testing, right? And again, with the EPA, you have to show a reasonable basis. So you would generally have to use a third party validated test cell to show that, hey, you meet the requirement, right? And it's an engineering test, right? And so what you're going to find is the people, the businesses that still want to operate in this business, they're going to have to step up their game to the individuals. They're going to have an engineer on staff. They're going to show compliance. They're going to have to show the data that they've tested it. And so as a consumer, this is pretty exciting because I believe product quality is going to improve drastically, right? So yeah, there may be a little bit of a thinning of the herd on businesses that actually are involved in this business, but the product quality will actually increase just due to the talent that's now involved in product design.
Well, there's been so many changes for quite a long time. You know, I know that with an influx of new truck owners, some of this stuff may seem new, but it's really not. I think I remember reading about this kind of stuff 9 or 10, 11 years ago, maybe even longer. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's progressed now to where it's not just one particular part of the diesel aftermarket that is effective, which I think for the longest time it tended to be tuning, but it's now also with everything. And I wanted to ask you about the scope. So when we're talking about products, what does it apply to? What needs to be tested or compliant? Is it, you know, I'm sure your turbos and injectors and things like that are, but does it also go down to, you know, accessories and things like that?
Yeah, no. So that's a really good question. Of course, the standard stuff, the engine stuff, actually, but you have to show a reasonable basis, right? And that reasonable basis is a engineering reasonable basis, right? And EPA is not going to say because you installed a heavy duty alternator that your emissions output could increase. Well, you know what? Actually, you know what? If you did install a heavy duty alternator, you could actually theoretically have a very small increase in emissions just due to the enhanced load that's put on the engine. But you know what? They're not scrutinized it to that degree, right? They're really tackling the violent offenders, the ones that are just egregious, right? Where there's just no doubt about it that people are abusing it, right? And those are the people they're going after. So EPA in itself says, you know what, transmission changes, those are fine. They're not really concerned about that, right? Bigger tires, not concerned about that. Bigger tires will increase the load on the engine, which higher load increases output, right? So they're not concerned about that. So the accessory stuff, I'm fairly comfortable saying that they're not going to tackle the accessories at all. Again, they're really focused on the overall delete market and really hitting those people hard.
Now, when it comes to the engine side and looking forward a little bit with the potential that aftermarket products have, what do you guys see or what do you guys forecast for, you know, a couple years down the road with, you know, can we still meet these requirements and maybe get a little bit more torque from something or a little bit more efficiency from something? How do you see the future of accommodating the aftermarket, I would say, want and desire that truck owners have with meeting these standards?
For sure. And I think we would just take a look at industry to show how far we've come, right? I'll go back to say 2002, right? You had a 5.9 Cummins in 2002, the automatic was produced 235 horse, right? There was very little emissions control on that particular engine. But now you know, from 2002 to 2021, right? You're looking at the engine horsepower has almost doubled, right? Torque certainly has doubled. And the vehicles now produce less emissions than they did back then. But I mean less, it's not by small digits. It's by close to, almost a thousandth of percents, right? So you take a look at the technology actually that has come. One is we get more horsepower, more torque, less emissions, right? And I believe technology will continue to drive us there. Us in the aftermarket, we take a look at that as well, and we say, hey, you know what? There's an opportunity for us. These emission systems are very, very good. The technology we have at our fingertips now, whether it's with engineers on staff, the ability to do, I'll call it a rolling road emissions test. So as I, in particular, driving, I can get instantaneous emissions values, right? These all add up into to a better derived, better engineered product where we can see instantaneously what specific action is causing emissions and design it out of that, right? And that's the end goal, right? So technology has really come full circle around, quite a bit better, and then to the point where we can actually design better products. So I'm excited for the next 5 years to see where this industry really goes. And I think the cream of the crop will rise to the top and still deliver quality products and deliver horsepower and excitement, user experience to our customers.
I think that the data acquisition tools that you guys have is probably, that's probably a whole podcast by itself that's really cool, but just the amount of data you can gather from a truck now versus in 2007 or 8 or 10 is probably light years different.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Oh, definitely. Even the data, it's not even actually what I can actually hook up to a truck or I can actually external stuff. Some of the sensors that are currently on the truck nowadays, right? And so where the factory ECM is actually doing a lot of this monitoring, right? And you think about that, you think in 15 years where now we actually have sensors monitoring PM, NOx, right? Dynamically.
Yeah.
It's a data junkie's dream, right?
I think that as you mentioned, really helps though with, you know, taking that idea that you guys have for a product, being able to test it. And I'm sure, you know, when you take a vehicle for testing, you know exactly how it performs, what it's going to do on the test, where it falls for its average, or, you know, what standards it meets. So it takes that guesswork out of it that may, you know, on some of those early DPF trucks may, you know, they didn't have the sensor, didn't have the computers monitoring certain things, where it was probably harder then versus now.
Oh, definitely. Like, for example, like 2008 Ford 6.4, right? And no disrespect to the Ford and the engineers and stuff like that, but they just didn't really have DPF figured out, right? Everybody knows of a nightmare story of maybe perhaps a 6.4 burning to the ground or they just continue to replace DPFs. It's really unfortunate because, unfortunately, I don't know how it came about, but the DPF is not deemed a emissions equipment like a catalytic converter. Catalytic converter, I think, has a warranty of 10 years due to being an emissions equipment. Not sure how the OEs got away with not listing a DPF as an emissions equipment. So. But those that warranty is pretty short at 1 to 2 years, and those Ford 6.4 users definitely had to pay for it, right? So technology's changed quite a bit since then. So a lot of the product now is quite a bit better, and so I think the user experience will be much improved. But still, it's that leaves a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths.
I just thought of a question, and this is completely out of left field, and I didn't prepare you for it. But somebody had asked me on Instagram recently, it was very general, but they said, hey, next time you have a, you know, company on, someone who knows, ask them how an aftermarket DPF could help this process of having a compliant truck, or does it not really even matter because of what they can do with, you know, either electronically or with the hard parts testing, just the OEM DPF is fine. So I wanted to ask you for your opinion on that. Is that the next evolution of it? Or is it something to where that's a whole other, you know, set of guidelines that maybe, you know, CARB or the EPA isn't even focusing on or wanting to touch. You just have to make these products work within what came on that truck stock from the OEM.
Yeah, typically, so this is, I don't have a tremendous experience with it, but from our testing, from what we've seen, is that generally the OE quality DPF nowadays is generally one of the highest quality components that you'll get, even in the aftermarket. So the original OE equipment DPF is very some of the highest quality you can get. And not to discredit anybody in the aftermarket, I'm sure the technology's changed quite a bit. Unfortunately, if you are Ford and you go to a DPF manufacturer like Johnson Matthey or anybody like that, and you said, hey, I need a couple million of these, you're gonna get the best quality at the lowest possible price. If you're the aftermarket guy and said, hey, I wanna buy 5,000 of them at the cheapest possible price, you may not get the same quality. In fact, I could almost guarantee it. So the aftermarket DPFs, typically on how they sell themselves, they increase the cross-sectional area to reduce the pressure drop across the DPF. It's the old larger air filter trick, right? You need more flow. I'm going to give you a bigger air filter. It reduces the pressure drop across it, flows more air, right? There's a lot of things that actually go into designing a DPF in regards to temperature, right? Because you have to burn a lot of those particulate matter pieces, the hydrocarbons, stuff like that. You got to burn that and convert it to soot. If you got a very large DPF, it's going to require a lot more energy to get up to temperature. And you're going to see that like in the L5P market, like you're seeing those DPFs come very close to the engine now to maximize that temperature. Once you get really large, you're going to have to disperse all that heat energy over a larger surface. I don't know how they would perform. I'd be interested in somebody showing test results, because that's what I would ask as a consumer. And as far as I do recall, CARB has a very strict DPF approval guideline. And I think the majority of the aftermarket people, it may have changed. When we looked at it 3 years ago, there's very few that actually met CARB approval, because not only have to show the performance of the DPF, and when I say performance, it means that you are scrubbing the PM, all right? You also have to show soot loading capability, and you have to do endurance long-term testing. And that's where it's been just prohibitively expensive, is that they make you test this unit for an exorbitant amount of time. It's not like 2 weeks test. It is months or years of testing to make sure that it continues to meet the OE requirement. So, and that's why we've seen not a heavy uptake on DPFs, aftermarket DPFs in the industry. It's getting better. I think every month it's going to get better, but these are one of the things that were a challenge, say, 3 years ago.
It's really interesting the way you explained it, because I think the perception early on, so like 2007.5, 2008, probably for 3 or 4 years, was that it's the DPF's fault, and that's the reason, you know, my truck's having issues, or that's the reason it's in fail-safe mode, or it says DPF full. And I think it's a really complex process, where I think a lot of it had to do with the programming, the hard parts, the what was factoring into this new emissions platform. And people will ask us, they'll say, hey, I'm in the market for maybe not a brand new truck, but I'm looking within the last 10 years. And where would you say for Ford, GM, and Dodge or Ram, when did the DPFs from the OEM become less troublesome? So, you know, would it be with the 2011 6.7 Power Strokes? Like, it was a vastly different platform than the 6.4, and I'm not sure with GM or Ram, but people do ask that, you know, if I'm going to pick up a truck and I want to have one, which year range would be kind of best for that efficient DPF that you just mentioned?
Yeah, for the Ram model, I always recommend that you look for a 13 plus. That's really when they instituted LEV 3 emissions, so 13 plus for the Ram. They didn't institute LEV 3 for the GM until the L5P, which is quite interesting. So that was a number of years later than that. And then that's really when the emissions equipment really started getting good on the GMs. And even on the Ford, you're looking at Ford, you're looking post 16, which is quite interesting, right? So I think 17, 18 was the actual LEV III introduction. So those are the model years that I typically look for, is really when they started to get a higher quality components, right? Because the emissions requirement was that much tighter. So
yeah, it's definitely exciting to hear what goes into all this. Like, you know, if I go to the BD website and I'm scrolling through products, is I can see all these different things that you guys have done testing on, but to know what actually went into it and to know how they work with other OEM components and deliver more performance or efficiency or reliability is really exciting if we're, you know, talking about a newer style truck that we're going to be purchasing and we need, you know, to control EGTs a little bit more going over a pass, or need a little bit more torque at this particular point, or a little bit cooler temperatures. It's really interesting to see how the diesel industry has transformed and taken this on and invested that engineering and expertise into it to deliver products.
Yeah, definitely. If you're dedicated to the industry, this is a step in the right direction, right? And it's so far a step in the right direction that for all our product, we're going to start listing the EPA and CARB test results. So you're going to be able to go to our website and you're going to be able to download the test results. It may be Greek to you, but we feel that we want to be transparent and list those test results for everybody. Yeah, and I think it's the step in the right direction.
I always like to ask you, what do you guys have coming up? Because whenever you're on the podcast, there's always these really cool things you guys have been working on for a while that I see release right after. So I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, so as Canadians, like the wintertime, we don't get out much, right? And so I find we're stuck in the kitchen cooking up. And so generally in the summertime is when we really start releasing product. And so the newest product we're going to release, I think you've actually had a competitor on, but the CP4 to CP3 conversion for the 19 and 20 Ram, that actually should be up on the website, Patrick, when you post his podcast. So that's the newest thing. So yeah, definitely. So a little bit different take that we tackled with it, similar to one other competitor. So. We're pretty excited about our kit as well. It's no tuning required, which is nice. Again, it starts ticking a lot of those boxes for EPA and CARB. And then in addition to that, right after that, we actually have a big front end Duramax upgrade that we're actually going to release that we figure is very cost effective, all forged components. And that's going to come up probably in about, we figure probably end of March, maybe beginning of April, and we're pretty excited in that kit because we're really going to start pushing hard into the Duramax components. So we don't really have a tremendous amount of Duramax offering, and so that's really going to be the first foray when we kick down the door and product really starts flowing towards the GM and Chevy guys. Sorry,
people love the no tuning kits, like and. If somebody is new to diesel and buys a new truck, they don't know how lucky they are to be able to get hard parts where you don't need tuning, because it wasn't like that before. If you changed anything,
yeah,
you had to have a tuning change. And that in itself is revolutionary, especially when we're talking about an injection pump and being able to have something that is more efficient, reliable, meets the testing that needs to be met. And you can just put it on your truck and you don't have to have it tuned or do anything electronically.
Oh, I agree again. And it's really the accumulation of this industry kind of maturing. Understand that, you know what, I shouldn't have to be a tune expert to install a pump, right? It just drives me crazy that what happened in the past is that you send a pump or send a part and you got to get your tuner. Challenge is we all know that we're all weekend warriors. There's a lot of us that tune or work on our trucks on the weekend. Try to get a hold of a tuner on a weekend. Impossible.
Yeah, it's tough. And I think that's really another aspect that's changed, you know, over the years, is the ability for the end user to install a product. And they're probably going to do it, you know, after work during the week or on the weekends. And you might not be able to get help right then, or you have to wait for tuning files back and forth or just whatever it might be. So it's really refreshing to see that. And I know that kit's going to be immensely popular. There's a lot of people that ask about that and have been looking forward to a solution to, just really for reliability.
Yeah.
I think that's what they want.
Yeah, so. Totally. Everybody, you know what, when you drop 70-80K on a truck nowadays, you expect it to be reliable, right? You expect that, you know, first thing in the morning when you start it up, it's going to start up, it's going to operate good. And when you put the 25,000-pound load on the back, that you expect it's going to tow as designed.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm curious to see when that drops and maybe do an in-depth episode about that product. And also the Duramax stuff that you mentioned, the suspension components are another huge part of just, you know, owning a Duramax. You're probably going to have to do something, you know, at some point with the suspension, and it's great to have options, you know, have options for it and just eliminate that potential maintenance issue or whatever might pop up.
Yeah, definitely. The joke here is that there's three things in life you're guaranteed of as a Duramax owner. It's death, taxes, and replacing front end parts.
Yep. Well, each model has their thing, you know, they're all a little different with what totally. You got to tackle.
But yeah, for sure.
It was fantastic to learn more about this and ask some questions that I know most people don't know. We just don't come across it. We just sit back and see things and are like, well, you know, what does this test mean? What does that test mean? Or, why are these companies having to do this and all that? So it was great to get some insights into it and learn more about what you guys have coming out for truck owners.
Yeah, definitely. I could really, there's a great document, actually. EPA produced a tampering policy what did they publish it? November 23rd, 2020. And it really takes you through the process on how EPA will, how it goes about actually taking a look at the particular product, right? And it gives an avenue for companies to make sure their product meets the requirement, right? So, and again, we all have responsibility in this, and we're going to, we need to do it. The industry's definitely changing, so it's part of the right thing, part of the responsible thing to do.
And it's also kind of removing that perception in the public, I would say, where they don't know they don't know what process the EPA or CARB go through to, you know, analyze a product, and they think maybe it's just arbitrary, but it's really not. And so I think information like that document you just mentioned, and especially for somebody who's thinking of a new product or somebody who's been in the industry for a long time and is looking to do something, they're outlining what needs to be done to be able to offer this product. So the information is there, and it's been really cool to see you guys tackle it head on and organize a whole product line, an entire product offering, to be able to, you know, that people can purchase with confidence. And I don't think that can be understated, because it's getting more strict. There are more, eyes and focus on diesel in general. And to be able to have this information, have the testing, it's really doing a lot for truck owners and I think the future of diesel.
Yeah, I would agree, definitely.
Well, as always, Christian, we appreciate your time chatting with us and look forward to sitting down with you here shortly and talking about some more products and more things you guys are working on.
Well, most definitely look forward to it, Patrick. Thank you for the time.
Don't forget, diesel fans, if there's any questions you have for Christian or BD Diesel about parts that you're looking to add to your truck, or maybe parts you have on your truck now and looking to maybe do something different with the setup or the build, make sure and reach out to them. You can find them on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. If you search on Google, you can pull up their website, give them a call, chat with them, or send them an email. They're more than happy to help you. Until next time, keep the shiny side up.